Week 3 is over. Bears, 3 up, 3 down, 3 wins, no losses. This is the Talking Bear Football Podcast.
Right here on WestBranchFootball.com.
We talked about this before the season, Matt, here on the Talking Bear Football Podcast, in our preseason editions, about how this schedule would make a team, would make what you would understand maybe by week 3, an identity for this team. Right now, if I'm giving you an identity, I'm starting with the defense. Offense has been fantastic, but I'll start, it's defensive.
Yeah, I mean, that has been the one consistent side of the ball for 3 weeks straight now. Yeah. So, of course, the last 2 weeks now we've seen, as we'll talk about, we've seen the offense kick it into gear, but the defense, as you said, has kind of been the one kind of glue holding everything together so far.
You add up all the 3 games together so far, 93 yards in the first game, 136 yards after 2 games combined for the first team defense, and then you put up 200 more on Friday, which will be a stat we'll talk later from the Williamsburg game Friday night. You do the math there, it's about 340 yards the first team defense has given up in 3 games, and a combined what, Matt? 12 points? 13 points? The first team defense has given up 13. 6 and 7. The 14 points was not the Wapello 14 points were not the first team defense. So, Tyler Bailey, my apologies. We got that going for us here. But Matt, final score, West Branch 31, Williamsburg 7. Your thoughts?
Just a really, I think that was a big game. You know, back at home, week 3 against a pretty good and potent 2A opponent in Williamsburg. Throwback night, and kind of a fitting opponent for throwback night, who we haven't played in 21 years, something like that. So,
checks out.
Yes. So I think that was just a big game, especially against, you know, another thing to add to Williamsburg's list of accolades is runner-ups last year in Class 2A. And just the last few seasons, they've been very successful down there. And then they came in with probably one of the best running backs in the state, in Gage Hazenfaber. And as we'll probably talk about here soon, the Bears held him to just over 100 yards, I think it was.
102. Yeah. 26 carries, so 102.
100 yards for Gage Hazenfaber, I would basically consider that no yards. Stopped.
Okay. When we get more into the stats, we'll bring that back up. But it looks like we've got a score and scoring drive recap is the first thing listed on Matt Chenander's table of contents for today's episode. So we'll go right to quarter number one, Matt. Williamsburg goes right down the field, and then we talk about the defense. Hold them on the 20-something yard line, 4 and out. The Bears take over, and here we go.
Yeah, so as we talked, I mean, I just want to touch on that real quick. As we talked about last week, I mentioned that I noticed on film that Williamsburg, you know, anytime they're past the 50 and maybe before the 15 or 20 yard line into the red zone, basically, it's 4 down territory for them. They don't have a strong leg kicker. And at that point, it's kind of too close to punt. You might as well take the chance and go for it. And that's what they did all night, and we'll see a theme develop here as we progress throughout this game. But yeah, Williamsburg, just that first drive of theirs was really, really a great drive, just kind of slowly pushing their way down the field, and the Bears' defense ended up, you know, with backs against the walls, putting a kibosh to that first drive, and then, you know, do what any good team does is take that next possession right down the field and score. And they did on a Cornwell to Brady Lukowski pass for 6 yards. I think it was KCRG who had highlights of the game, and I kind of chuckled when I saw it. I think the big part of that drive was Tanner Lukowski run down to maybe the 6-yard line, 5 or 6-yard line. And then KCRG said, well, if you can't punch it in, at least your brother can. From 6 yards out, so Cornwell found Brady for the touchdown. So Bears up 7-0 after that point. And then speaking of Tanner Lukowski again, probably maybe not the ne- Was it the next drive? Two drives in a row we scored?
Very next drive. Yeah, yes, sir.
Yep, that's right. So punch it in and go up 14-0. First drive was 82 yards, and the next drive was 76 yards. And that second drive was only in four plays.
Wow.
Yep. So, yeah, at that point, up 14-0, as I said, we enter the second quarter. Williamsburg got on the board with a one-yard touchdown run on a six-play, 58-yard drive. Tanner Lukowski put it in the end zone again, this time going into the north end zone in what was quite a run. He mauled over a couple guys while going through a really crowded line of scrimmage on the line there. Found his way into the end zone from 6 yards out to put the Bears up 21-7. And then with, I think, just 16 seconds or so left in the half, Bears marching again towards that north end zone. Couldn't put it into the end zone, but they did end up getting a 27-yard field goal from Cornwell to go up 24-7 at the half.
You're right. It was 15 seconds, according to the play-by-play.
Yep.
And by the way, kind of going back, you said in only four plays, 76 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Key play of that drive, Matt, can you remember?
Thomas Gould catch.
Who's he?
He is a freshman.
Wow. Welcome to the varsity football, young man. Yeah. Your first reception as a Bear goes for 53 yards.
Yep. Pretty good debut.
That's not a bad debut for a young man.
I'll save some of my comments on him for when we get to more into the stats.
There you go.
Okay. And then in the third quarter, there was just one score there in the third quarter. And it was actually our Hoover Foundation uncommon play of the game, really. The Bears were lining up for a field goal. I believe it was a 26-yard attempt.
27.
27, 26.
It was going to be booking 27. He had, you already talked about one. He was going to try another one.
Yep, try another one. And
let's do another one.
The field was a little wet. The ball was a little wet. There was a low snap to Brett Shealy, who couldn't quite handle it. And so at that point, I think he tossed it to Bo, and Bo just kind of improvised. And as we'll hear from Brady Lukowski talking about that here in an interview soon, Bo just found it to Brady in the end zone, and I'd like you guys to hear what Brady thought of that play. Let's play that now.
Now we're going to have our Hoover Presidential Foundation uncommon play of the game. The field goal, bad snap, turned into a touchdown, and Jerry's got a four-putt. Brady Lukowski.
It is, and we were just talking. You're part of the most uncommon play of the game. Busted field goal, turned into a touchdown. Brady, what were your thoughts on that play?
I was just going to do my assignment with block down, but then the guy in front of me said it was a fumble, so I had to go out for a pass, and I just saw the ball coming, and I just caught it.
Well, and I looked at the expression on your face when you caught it, and I don't know if you realized you had a touchdown at that time or not, but it was like, and then you looked at the sidelines and saw that everybody was jumping up and down.
I didn't realize there was a touchdown until everyone started screaming their heads off, and I was just excited.
Very good. Well, congratulations. Next week, Tipton.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go in there, just do our assignment, and just hopefully come out the W.
Very good. Congratulations on the uncommon play of the game.
Oh, the uncommon player. The uncommon man, as pegged by Susan Harmon. An uncommon man, as pegged in a wonderful article on yourprepsports.com last year by longtime writer, Hall of Fame, Iowa Sports Hall of Fame writer, Susan Harmon. So if you have a chance to check that out, I know Matt's got a link somewhere within the WestBranchFootball.com Rolodex.
Mm-hmm.
But Brady Lukowski, and that, if memory serves, that was the final score as far as from a scoring aspect. That was it.
Correct. Yeah, so 31-7 was where we stood in the third, and really at that point the Bears kind of put it away, and just, you know, throughout the rest of the third and throughout the fourth quarter, really just kind of played that clock game and let the thing run out. Big thing I want to talk about here, Jason, with you is all of the opportunities that Williamsburg had and, for the lack of a better term, shot themselves in the foot.
They had many opportunities, but the stalwart play of that Bear defense, I think, shone more brightly to me than did the mistakes or miscues of the Raider offense.
I mean, there's a blend for both ways. Yeah,
there's a blend, but I think the defensive play is going to outweigh the error or the miscue of their offense on Friday night, if you go back and watch the film, and I know you have.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely both. And just to catch our listeners up, there was the Bears defense was out on the field for 10 series on Friday night. And of those 10, 7 resulted in either a fumble recovery or a turnover on downs. And I think the majority of those were in West Branch territory. So Williamsburg, you know, definitely they pushed the ball down the field. But as I mentioned earlier, when the Bears, when their backs were up against the wall, they really cracked down and found some way to stop the Williamsburg offense, whether it be just on fourth down, not letting them get to that line to gain, or forcing a turnover or whatever it may be. And as you say, it's either a mix of just great play by the Bears defense or maybe some miscues on the Williamsburg side. But that was a really interesting stat that popped out to me of when the Bears, you know, as I said, had their backs against the wall, they really buckled down and really just put a kibosh to Williamsburg.
Yes.
And that it really made all the difference in the game, I think.
I will not disagree with you there. I agree.
Well, all right.
Point well argued.
All right. Any commentary from you, Jason?
My commentary, wow. I think I'm going to bring back up, Matt, again, the defensive play. And this has nothing to do with something I heard earlier in the week, but because it doesn't matter what I heard there. Just look, if you were at the game, look, you could look at the statistics. Here's what I looked at today before we came on the podcast. Gage Hazen-Faber, right, had 26 carries, 102 yards. That's basically 4 yards a carry. Just shy of 4 yards a carry. We'll give it to you, 4 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Of those 26 carries, Matt, how many of those carries do you think went for 5 yards or more?
I'll say 6 or 7.
You are right on the number. You don't even need to put the 7 in there. 6 is correct.
I did not look that up, but just kind of remembering. I know he had some good, I think those 6 that he had were actually pretty decent runs, to be honest.
He had one run over 10 yards. He had two. Yeah. He actually had another one, but it was called back for a penalty. But one official carry for over 10, and that was a 20-yard carry. He had a 9-yard carry, a 9-yard carry. There's 3 carries for 38 yards. Mm-hmm. 2 6-yard carries, 5 carries for 51, add in a 5-yard carry. He had 6 carries for 56 yards. So that leaves what? 46 yards on 20 carries. This is it. So 102 yards he had, Matt. Go back to his last 13 plus this year, too. Last 15 games, he averaged 200 yards rushing plus per game. Over 200 yards per game, and the Bears held him to half of that.
Yep.
So you tell me, if you know, when you're watching film, you know the kid's going to get the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They're not ashamed. I wouldn't be either to give it to number 22. Put his number in reverse. It's still 22, and he's still going to get the ball.
Yep.
So you just have to stop it. It was like we said, I think, in the podcast, one of us said the words, you can
contain.
You may stop it, but you have to contain.
That's what we did.
Sooner or later, that kid's going to break one, and he did.
Yeah.
Well, but they contained him.
You know, Nick Goodweiler was sitting next to both of us there in the press box on Friday, and he's like, "I'm just waiting for this kid to break one. As much as I don't want it to happen, I just want to see him do it because of how talented he is." I'm like, "Nick, careful."
Yeah.
And he broke one out, and we both just looked at each other and like, he is quick.
Once he puts the foot down on the pedal and gets going, hits the hole.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
He turns a normal running back's 1 or 0 1-2 yard gain into 20 real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because he goes 0 to 100 on speed real quick.
Yeah.
So
Jay, how about some of our guys?
Who, some stats. Like what, the West Branch kids?
Them? Yeah. Should we talk about them?
I tell you what. Why don't you start with rushing? Go to passing, and I've got something for you.
Okay, sounds good. So rushing, Tanner Lukowski, as you mentioned earlier, if you're counting, 2 touchdowns on the night. He had 17 carries and racked up 135 yards on the ground. And then fullback Wyatt Hamby, 8 carries for 9 yards.
Wyatt Hamby! The thumb. You talked about Lukowski, 2 touchdowns. We've already heard from his brother. Well, if his brother can't do 2 interviews, Tanner might as well do the second one. And here it is.
Time now for our Main Street Suites Polar Bear of the Game, Jerry.
Yes, our Polar Bear game player of the game, Tanner Lukowski. Tanner, congratulations. Great night. Obviously, you were running hard. Steve, what were the statistics again for Tanner tonight?
17 carries for 135.
22 carries for 135 yards. And really, we were noting you were running, really high striding, powering through, picking up those extra yards.
I think I've been lowering my shoulder a little bit more instead of trying to, like, bounce it out, which has helped me a lot.
Well, your offensive line did a tremendous job tonight.
Yeah, those were probably the biggest holes I've seen in my running back career.
And there were some big ones then. And then defensively, you had some nice stops. In particular, you had one, I think, against Williamsburg's good back. What were your thoughts on defense?
I think we did a pretty good job. We could definitely improve a lot because I think he had quite a few rushing yards.
And obviously another hot, humid night. You got a couple cramps that took you out for a while.
Yeah, I think I need to drink a little bit more water, which will help me a lot.
Well, there's a couple others on there. I bet you're probably going to get preached by Butch this week, aren't you, on that?
Yeah, he'll say a lot of bananas, too.
I'm sure he will.
Pickle
I'm
juice.
Sure he will. Again, congratulations on our player of the game. Thanks, Tanner.
Passing, Bo Cornwell. He was 19 of 32, 286 yards, 2 touchdowns for the air, and once again, 0 interceptions.
All right, man. I told you I'd have something for
all
you.
All right.
2 points for this. Two historic points on this. No school records were broken there. Had he have had... Before last season, the 19 would have tied a record. Completions. 32 attempts is the second most in the history of West Branch football. Only eclipsed by Jamie Lasjack in 1985 with 34 against Clear Creek, Amana. 286 yards is a top 5 passing performance in individual passing performance all time in West Branch football history. There have only been 1, 2 quarterbacks to go over 300 yards passing. Cornwell's one of them. So if you're just shy of 300, that's going to put you in some rarefied air. Speaking of air, when you're putting it in the air, somebody's got to bring it down.
Yep.
How about receivers?
Yeah, we had quite a few guys rack up some good stats on Friday night. Leading the way, at least in yardage, was Brett Sheely, 3 receptions for 102 yards, which is about a 34 almost. Yards per catch.
Checked
I think
out.
If you look at his stats for the entire season, he's got a crazy yards per catch statistic. I think 25 or 26 yards
20,
per catch.
22.6?
Yeah, something crazy
somewhere
like
in
that.
There.
Yeah, yeah, something crazy like that. So hopefully he keeps that up. let's see. Brady Lukowski, I have him down for 2 receptions for 2 touchdowns.
That's not a bad... He's like Chris Carter. All he does is catch touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So
2 catches,
I'm
15
sorry.
Yards, and 2 touchdowns. That's
I was
right.
confusing him for Tanner. So, Brady, yes, 2 touchdowns, 2 receptions. I think that puts him at, what, 5 or 6 on the year? He's leading the team.
For what?
Touchdown receptions.
He has 3.
Okay, sorry.
3 guys with 3?
Yeah, tied with Brett.
Yep. And then... I think Trey Eagle has the other one because Bo has 7 now on the season. So,
yeah, and then also, as we mentioned earlier, Thomas Gould, 3 receptions, 76 yards. And then Wyatt Goodale, 3 receptions for 33 yards. And as I said earlier, I do want to jump back to Thomas Gould. His first reception was 55 yards.
53. Close
and,
enough. We'll round it up.
Yeah, good enough. And that was his first career reception as he set out the first 2 games with a little bit of injury there. But he's good to go week 3 and made a pretty big impact on the field. I specifically remember that first reception there going into the south, towards the south end zone. And then it was either his 2nd or 3rd, but the Bears were headed towards the north. He had just a little maybe out or a slant route towards the east sideline and brought it back in, made a guy miss, and got another 10 yards or so after the catch. Just a really great move. What I wanted to mention about him is when you watch him play, I think he's just got a really nice, he's just has a really nice football fluid motion to him, so to speak. He catches the ball. He's can quick, pretty good strides, and he can make guys miss. He just seems to have a knack for knowing how to run the ball, if that makes sense.
It's kind of what they call that?
It's kind of a hard thing to put into words, but I think you know what I mean.
It's three words. The it factor. He's got it. When you got it, you got it. He can make some. He can make some small catches look big.
He,
as evidenced by, he can make some big catches look really big, as evidenced by that 53. We're rounded up to 55 yard catch. Fun stat for you, and then you can wrap it up. 19 completions Cornwell had to 7 different receivers, and each of those 7 had at least 2 receptions.
Yeah. I think you set, what did we set over under 7.5 or 8 for number of receivers with a catch in the game? Or is that in the whole season?
I think that might have been the whole season, but we're there.
We're close.
We're pretty much there. It's close. Yeah.
And then rounding out receiving, Wyatt Goodale, 3 receptions for 33 yards. But I do want to mention Wyatt Goodale again. He had 8.5 tackles on the night. So pretty good defensive performance from him. And that coming from a defensive back, a lot of the time those tackles are in the open field. So good job by him by not letting any plays get any further down the field. And then sophomore Jeff Bowie, 6.5 tackles, 1 sack. Tanner Lukowski, 3 tackles, 1 sack. 2 of those 3 tackles being for a loss. And, of course, the other being a sack.
Now we've heard all the statistics, Matt. We've heard all of this about a wonderful victory. We'll just leave it there, 31-7 against a team that has about 200 more kids at their school than West Branch does. Well, maybe 100, but a school that before the season I would have said, that would be an even game, maybe advantage Williamsburg. Well, not Friday. And Coach Peterson would have been the first person maybe to talk to you about that before the season started, and still will tell you that it's a wonderful win. Well, did he tell us that, Matt? In the post game? Are you sure?
Yeah, he did.
All right, I'm going to put you to the test.
All right.
Because we're going to listen to him right now.
Coach, congratulations. Win number 299 tonight.
Yeah, that's really not important to me right now, Jerry. It's the fact that these kids are growing up, they're playing hard. They played a big, solid, physical football team, and we out hit them.
And 445 yards total offense.
Oh, that's incredible. This is absolutely incredible. And, you know, they have a very potent offense, they're very explosive, and scored 7 points. And we're not even close to our potential. We're going to get better and better and better. I can't wait for next Friday.
And the players are just really excited. I mean, they're here ready to play tonight.
Oh, they want to play. They know what it's all about. We've learned to play one game at a time, and that's the way we need to play football at West Branch. And I'm very excited from the coaches. I'm very excited for the players.
Very good. Congratulations. Tipton next week. Any thoughts?
No, I just can't wait to see those guys on our field because they have a great football team. They're undefeated. We're undefeated, so it's going to be Cedar County battle.
It'll be a great game. Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's wrap that game, put a bow on it, wrap it up in some nice gift wrap, Matt, because that's a wonderful victory. We want to keep that on the shelf, put a bow on it. We're going to stick it under the victory tree.
I like it.
That's 3 times this year.
It's getting full.
Three wins, no losses. Moving on. One more thing before we move to week 4, Matt. Catch us up. What's going on around District 4?
Well, we have a full slate of games, of course, Friday. So, of course, West Branch winning 31-7 over Williamsburg. We had Beckman and Dyersville. They played Clayton Ridge and beat them 28-6. Bellevue with a pretty good win over Monticello, 35-7. We were kind of following that one on Twitter during the West Branch game. And Bellevue was had the fortunate opportunity to pick off Monticello, I think, 3 or 4 times. quite the job there by the Comet defense to capitalize on those opportunities.
And looking back at that, I think we brought it up in the last podcast, or if we didn't, I'm going to bring it up now. Mm-hmm. Monticello is coming off a convincing victory last week over Dyersville Beckman, in which they put up over 500 yards of total offense. And then they go into this week against Bellevue, and limited by the turnover, and certainly limited on offense. So Coach Kaneki in Bellevue, he's got things rolling up there. Who knows, maybe it's a Week 5 showdown again this year, Matt.
I think we predicted that.
I think
and
I think
lot
that
of
was
media outlets have as well.
They have now, for sure. Yeah. So,
and moving on, so Kimbanch squeaked one out over North Cedar, 26-24. Cascade kind of put a whomping on Mack Valley, 53-7. And then Wapello with their first win of the year, beating Northeast Goose Lake 32-24.
Got to correct you there. Oh, because every win in the RPI counts. That's Wapello victory number two.
Oh, two. I'm sorry.
They beat L&M the first week in overtime.
That's right.
RPI. You watch Wapello. That's good for the RPI. Another victory for the Bears.
Probably RPI. We could start talking about that next week. I think it's after week four.
Yes, after week four. The Bears' opponents right now are 3-3. Wapello's 2-1. West Liberty's 1-2 after getting a 28-27 thrilling overtime victory. That's 2 weeks in a row they've gone to overtime. This week they actually scored in regulation. 28-27 victory over Anamosa. And Winsburg is now 0-3. But they might be one of the better 0-3 teams in the state of Iowa. And it doesn't get any easier for the Raiders. They've got Regina, who is coming off a defeat to Pella Christian, a close game, 24-21. So
did you say our opponents were 3-3?
3-3 combined.
No, 3-6.
I'm sorry. Yeah. 3-6. Yep. We need some victories, Matt. We need victories from those. I'm cheering for all those teams now. Wapello, Coach Parsons, you're my second favorite team. West Liberty, I'm going to cheer for you. I'm going to cheer for you, too. So, we talked about 286 passing yards for Bo Cornwell and how that's a top five performance. I can tell you what's the number one performance from a coaching perspective of West Branch football history. 299 victories to 74 losses. Only 12 coaches in the history of Iowa High School Athletic Association football, Matt, have coached their teams to more victories than has James Butch Peterson. So if you had a trivia contest, you didn't know his name, it's James, his first name. But Butch Peterson, Matt, resides now squarely on the precipice of history. He would become the 13th coach in the history of Iowa high school football to lead his program or programs combined, if you have multiple teams you've coached, as a head coach to 300 victories. Top 12 in order. We won't need to give their victories, but there are only three guys in the 400 club. That's Dick Ty, Jerry Pizzetti, the active leader at Ankeny Centennial right now, 412. The other 400 club member, Kurt Blatt, great coach there at Harlan, 8 or 9 state championships at Harlan Community. In his 40th season, he's had 407 victories. That's 10 per year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah,
Gary Swenson.
He and Pizzetti are still coaching.
They're still going strong. 57 years, Matt, that Pizzetti has been on the sidelines. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Swenson at Valley High School, West Des Moines Valley, 43 seasons, 349 wins. He's fourth on the list, and he's active. Pat Mitchell, retired coach of Cedar Falls, is next. Dwayne Twait from Emmitsburg, storied program and success, was 285-37 at Emmitsburg. That's ridiculous, the percentage of that. I mean, that is some crazy, crazy good coaching.
Yeah.
Bob Sanger is next in line. That would put him seventh. Tom Stone, great coach at Pekin. Had a few tangles with him through the years, did the Bears and Coach Peterson. Bob Howard, the father of the crazy Barnum and Bailey offense at Sigourney Kyoto, is number 9.
And he's 10th still
place.
Going.
He's still going at Webster City. Kenny Winkler, assistant coach now. He's no longer a head coach, but he is back as an assistant coach at West Marshall. Comes in at 10th with 322. Jim Bellamy at Mount Vernon was 268-93-1. Guess what? He coached many victories against West Branch. In fact, 20 of them in a row from 1967 to 1986, Matt.
Wow.
How's that for a stat?
Yikes.
And rounding out the 300 club, retired coach at Madrid, Randy Hinkle. 29 seasons, 266. Complete, 314. James Butch Peterson could be number 13, Matt, if the Bears can get a win on Friday night. He's now at 299 and 74 in 36 and one-third seasons. Well, 35 and one-third seasons of coaching. Wow.
Yeah. And I think we mentioned this back in one of our earlier episodes this season, but he has a chance to do it at home, which I know we've talked about before. He's never had a what you could consider a win milestone be at the Little Rose Bowl.
He has not.
So I think this is be an important one to hopefully get for him. And crazy stat, too, his first victory was against who?
I can tell you.
Yeah?
But let's hold off on that for just a second.
Why is that?
I just want to talk about this a little bit more. By the way, another stat on his 299.74, Matt, that's an 80.8 winning percentage at West Branch High School. In fact, the funny part of this, another fun thing, he's done it all at West Branch. Mm-hmm. Only three coaches that are in the 300 win club did it all at one school. Sorry, four, I take that back. So only one-third of them have done it at one school. Kurt Blatt, who's still at Harlan, Pat Mitchell, retired at Cedar Falls, Bob Sanger, who's still active at Britt West Hancock, and Tom Stone at Pekin of Peckwood. Butch Peterson, if he gets it, which, by the way, I've got this sheet, a PDF, Iowa High School Athletic Association.org. How about respect the coach by spelling his name correctly? It's P-E-D-E-R-S-E-N, not O-N. Good heavens, you've probably had a few conversations with the guy. You've broken bread together. Peterson. That's Butch Peterson. And he's on the precipice of history. Perhaps in week four, Matt, against Tipton.
Yep.
The Bears' opponent. You talked about where the first win was. It was at Tipton. 32-6, sorry, your final. Darren Miller, part of the Iowa Athletic Program, University of Iowa Athletic Program, and longtime contributor to the Tipton Conservative, was a player on that team. I had a chance to speak with him yesterday in person. And I quote, he says, "Yeah, I was on that team. It was 14-6 at halftime. Coach Peterson, they decided, well, I was killing them at receiver, that they decided to put Mark Hyde on me. I didn't have another catch the rest of the game. The Bears win 32-6 going away." Who was the quarterback on that team, Matt?
Marv Cook.
Marv Cook was in his third year as the starting quarterback for West Branch as a senior. Fun fact, he's the only player in the history of Iowa high school football to get first team All-State at three different positions. How about that? In fact, he was second team in a fourth. That's crazy. That probably won't happen again.
No.
So, 299 and counting. Maybe it's Friday. And like you said, none of the milestone victories have been in West Branch, Matt. So maybe it becomes in West Branch. First one was at Tipton. We'll just give you a few of them. The 50th was a playoff game against Cedar Rapids LaSalle. The Bears won 44-29. In 1991. Skipping ahead to the 200th game, Sigurd was against Kiyosakura Van Buren. 66-23 was the final. And 250th win. Matt, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that against?
Sigourney Kyoto.
Final score, 55-20. Thunder and Lightning, Bo Bauer and Kate Jones each rushed for almost 200 yards apiece. In fact, they both had less than 10 carries and were both over 180 yards rushing that night in three quarters. Not a bad stat. Not a bad yard per carry when you're getting 20-plus, 20 a pop. All credit to the big guys up front. So, it all worked out the way the plan wanted it, Matt. Your 300th win, you'd like to just get it.
Right.
You'd also like to get it at the Little Rose Bowl.
Beggars can't be choosers.
But they can't be. And I can tell you who doesn't want him to get the 299th win. That's the Tipton Tigers.
You mean the 300th?
The 300th win. Sorry, they didn't. They have no choice on whether at 299. It happened. It happened. But they do not want him to get to 300. They don't want it at their expense. But sometimes history has a way of making things happen. We won't know that until we talk next week about it. But let's get into Tipton, the game preview. The Bears will wear the red jerseys this week. It's military appreciation game. Which means what, Matt?
It means we are honoring our active and former military.
And what else does that mean before the kickoff?
We're honoring them.
We are honoring them. And there's going to be some skydivers. They're going to jump with parachutes that are going to deploy at some point.
You're right. That wasn't the most important part, so I didn't
I appreciate didn't say that. It. And I'm glad that you didn't focus on that to begin with, because I wouldn't have either. And God bless America. But getting caught to the skydivers, it's a pretty cool thing when you see it in a small town. But they got to come down through the trees and land perfectly. And they've done it so wonderfully each and every year. I've got to thank Brandon Keeler, and specifically the Red Buffalo. Dave McElrath and his wife Kathy for really being a spearhead in this sort of, I don't want to call it a program, but promoting the military and getting things set up for this game each and every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, so it's going to be a really nice kind of pregame ceremony. As you mentioned, skydivers are going to land at the middle of in the middle of Little Rose Bowl. And then also there's going to be kind of a big American flag display surrounding the field. Special music, as we mentioned, the red jerseys, and all sorts of just great, great things to honor our active and former military members. Also, I do want to say, if you are a current member of the military or you are a veteran, please come out. We'd love to be there and recognize you for your sacrifice and your service to our country. And you're able to get into the game for free, no charge for that, as a small token of appreciation. And be there. It's going to be a pretty cool night, I think.
And there's going to be a very big crowd.
Yeah.
Because you know what's on the line also, Matt?
A win.
A win and the Cedar County Cedar County Trophy.
Yeah.
This is a big one. This is a biggie. If you want to win, the Cedar County Trophy, you got to win all the games of the Cedar County games. And this is a Cedar County game.
Yeah.
The last time the Bears and the Tigers faced off, Matt, hold on, let me think about it. Way back 2017. Yeah. That's right. It checks out. 30-20 was the final. The Bears took a commanding lead at halftime, 20-0, and we're cruising right along. The Tigers roared back. Late field goal by Cornwell, 31-yarder, put the score at 30-20, which served to be the final score. So the Tigers will have a little confidence coming to this one. They gave the Bears everything they wanted and then some last year. And they are 2-1 coming into this game after an impressive victory against another team that gave the Bears fits in 2017, Durant. The Bears took ahead. They had to kick a late field in that one. Had to kick a late field goal to win it. Off the foot of Cornwell. But the Tigers, 28-14 victorious last Friday night against Durant, which was also the score in 2016 when the Bears and the Tigers played. Did you like that? Perfect timing as you move the arrow down, Matt?
Yep, you got it.
28-14 again was the final in week 8 of 2016. So, Cedar County Trophy game. What's that mean to you, man? I mean, it's big. It's when you're a little kid.
I mean, it's just bragging rights over everyone in the county.
That's pretty much all it means.
Yeah, I mean, we have Durant and Tipton and North Cedar. Obviously, North Cedar. West Branch. That's it, right?
Wilton has Cedar. That's a little Cedar County in them.
Well, yeah. Are they technically Muscatine?
They've got Wilton, they've got Muscatine and Cedar County, but we'll go with Muscatine because I believe the school is actually in Muscatine County. How about that?
That's fine with me.
Good enough for the girls we go out with.
Yes.
Okay. So far this year, Tipton,
yeah.
North Cedar, the first of the round robin for the Cedar County games. The Tigers took first place in that one, 39-18. So this is big if you want the trophy, the mythical trophy, of course. Week 2, The Tigers. I said 2-1. Did I? The Tigers have 3-0.
Yeah.
This is a battle of undefeateds for the Cedar. There's no other game you'd rather play in than Friday night at the Little Rose Bowl for the Cedar County Trophy. Military Appreciation Night. The Tigers have a chance to stop the Bears from getting Coach Peterson his 300th win. Nobody else would they like to do that against than West Branch. Nobody else, no other team, rather, would like to do it more than Tipton. This is a big game for them. This is tells them where they are. It's a one of those pegboard games, if you will. It's a springboard, man. It's a springboard into district play next week because Tipton plays in a district. I think they may have a chance. They're going to be right in the mix there with Mount Vernon, West Liberty. I think they're going to be in the mix. It's going to be fun to watch that as it plays out. But you asked me this. You didn't physically ask me in the podcast, but I'll let you ask me now. What does it say on the table of contests? You're going to ask me what? Who are we going to what?
Well, players to watch for, but you didn't finish out their game so far, did you?
No, already talked about Durant in week 3.
Oh, 28 I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah,
28 to 14, Wildcats of Durant.
I did want to point this out though, is this is a big win for West Branch in regards, or this is a big opportunity rather, a must win, as I should say.
It is.
Against Tipton for the Cedar County Trophy because Tipton's already played two Cedar County opponents and have won them both. For the entire season, West Branch only plays two Cedar County opponents. So
we're really nailing this one into the ground here.
I mean, at this point, the Bears cannot win it outright. They have to, well, maybe a tie. So because if the Bears beat Tipton and they beat North Cedar, then they'd have two Cedar County wins matching Tipton. And then for the tiebreaker, do you go head-to-head matchup there?
You do. I think you flip a coin.
Okay.
I think that was decided before this season.
Okay.
You go to whatever the sports bar there in Tipton.
Yes.
And flip a coin and drink your favorite Pepsi product.
Yep.
And if you can't win it by a coin toss, you do a Mountain Dew chugging contest. Well, Matt, I think we've kind of beat that dead horse a little bit much. So let's move on to another important factor. And right now we've brought Stephen Grace, the voice of the Bears, join us. Welcome to the podcast again, Stephen. And I'm going to talk about this. Both teams are 3-0. Both teams, this is their last game of the non-district schedule. And we've already brought up at the beginning of the program the RPI. Three wins after four games would look pretty good on somebody's resume, don't you think, fellas? The winner of this game is going to have a team that's 3-1 on the resume. And that's going to play an important role as we go further down this RPI trail, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think that's where so many things will come into play. I mean, 3-1 looks great, but then you also take that next step of, you know, what is your opponent's win-loss record? And that's where I said Friday night after the ball game, it's like, you know, Williamsburg could be a team that might be right at 500. You know, they're 5-4, 5-4, 4-5. That could make it into the playoffs because they've played such a tough schedule because they've got a lot of teams with three wins already at this point. But yeah, that's where, I mean, every game matters and you want your opponents to be doing well and you want to make sure that they're playing teams that have been doing well as well, because that's going to translate to a lot higher number for you and a lot better chance that you'll get into the postseason.
100% right. That he's not the voice of the Bears for nothing, right, Matt?
Absolutely.
I mean, your thoughts on that too. You think about it. It used to be that you could go 0-0. Who cares about the games in the non-district play? Of course, you can still run the table in your district and you win your district. That's the equalizer. But now, if you go 0-4 and go 4-1, you're out. You are out. There's no way you're going to get into the playoffs at 4-5. It's not happening. If you were 4-1 or whatever, had one loss in your district last year, you'd be in the playoffs. But you'd also be, you know, you could probably be at 6-3 at worst. So
curious to see how this plays out as the season goes on. And, you know, 4A had done that for years, and you saw it where teams maybe had a couple more wins and got left out. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see based on the districts and the non-district. And I know we talked, okay, you know, a win versus a very good 2A school in Williamsburg and a good West Liberty 2A school versus maybe somebody that's got wins over a couple of Class A schools. I mean, they could be quality programs, but it's not weighted any differently. So that'll be interesting to see if that is something that gets changed in the future as well.
Exactly. I think that will play a role, I think, 2 years from now. The you know, if you're a 1A school beating a 3A school, you should get more credit. And a 3A school beating a 1A school should get a little bit less credit. And first of all, why are you playing a 1A school anyway? But that's not my point. So moving on to Tipton here, guys. Of course, Matt brought this up at the beginning of the program, and we've tried to find statistical breakdown from their 28-14 victory on Tipton's 28-14 victory over Durant on Friday night. What we do have through 2 weeks is this. They do not like to throw the football very much. They are a pound the ground, get the clock running. We will control the clock and the pace of play at our pace, on our control, on our time. They've got four guys with over 100 yards rushing through 2 weeks. So through 2 weeks, they've got three guys averaging over 50 yards rushing. West Branch statistically has one, and number two isn't even close.
Well, you look, though, a lot of it is style of play. I mean, we saw it the last couple of years. Coach Zutenhorst runs the single wing offense, so you're going to see a lot of pulling guards. You're going to see counter plays. You're going to see quick trap plays to the fullback. There's going to be a lot of movement around there, and it's hard for defenses to really key on that football. So that's where the linebackers especially are going to make sure they're filling gaps, watching things to make sure that there's not anything that's getting by them. And then that secondary's got to make sure that, I mean, we got kind of lucky. There was that wheel route against Williamsburg Friday night that, the two corners got caught looking in, the safety got caught sucked up, and all of a sudden Williamsburg had that wheel route. Luckily, we were able to run them down to not give up any points off of it. But that's what Tipton's going to be looking for is, just ground and pound. Oh, hey, we're going to run a quick play action and try to catch you off balance back there. So, yeah, they do a lot of different things. I've watched a little bit of their first game from North Cedar. Haven't had a chance to look at some of the others yet. But, yeah, very similar to the last couple of years where they're just going to spin around and this guy may motion and go from the left wing and they go off tackle right. They may motion him, counter it back to the left. They may go just a fullback dive. So going to be a lot of different things that the defense is going to have to key on here this week.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that Tipton is going to count on so far is just kind of misdirection or catching the defense off guard into terms of who actually has the ball. And as Jason mentioned, they have four guys already over 100 yards rushing this season. So I think that's a telltale sign of you can't key in on one guy because they have several other playmakers in their backfield that can hurt you.
I think you used a good word there, Matt. You said key, which ties into what Stephen was saying and brings it to this is that you got to have keys on defense. Like Stephen said, you got to fill the gaps. You can't get lost. I'll use the phrase of from the movie Hoosiers. Don't get caught watching the paint dry, okay?
Follow the guards. The guards will take you to the football.
They will take you where you want to go more times than not. You've got those four guys at over 100 yards through two games were each averaging basically 7 yards or more per carry. It's not like it's 4 yards in a cloud of dust, guys.
Only 7 pass attempts, only 4 pass completions through those two games. 3 of those have gone for touchdowns, though. So, like I say, it's one of those that those four guys can get chunks of yardage. All of a sudden, you're getting 8-9 guys in that box, and boom, they pull that pop pass of some sort, and look out, find a way to get into the end zone.
Well, guys, I think we can break a few of the players you got to watch out for. And, I mean, you can go down the quick stats list, too. But I'll say that I'm going to bring the key players I think to watch out for are Logan Stolte and Austin Lenz.
Both were guys who were pretty instrumental in Tipton's offense last year, if I remember correctly.
Exactly right, Matt.
Yeah, this is a team. I mean, I'm trying to remember what it was for sure. I'll have to look before we get to our game preview this week. But, I mean, they had a lot of sophomores and juniors that were playing last year. So, I mean, I don't think they lost a whole lot from last year's squad. So, and they still have quite a few sophomores and juniors that are playing this year. So, it's a young team, but they're hungry. They're scrappy out there, too. So that'll be, it'll be fun to see how this one plays out once we get it out into the field.
They lost their two leading rushers and their quarterback. But they return The third player I want to bring up, the X Factor. They don't pass it much, guys, but when they do, the guy out there catching the football who has two touchdowns out of three catches is Frank Bierman. 6'4". 6'4" target you got to throw it to. You know, on those short yardage plays, throw it up for grabs. West Branch's corners aren't a, perhaps they'll see that. They'll see the mismatch maybe from a height perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with skill.
No.
But a 6'4" guy can get up to 9 to 10 feet a lot better than a 5'8" guy can. Just throwing that out there. So, and last year he was their leading receiver last year as well. At 20.5 yards per catch was Bierman. 13 catches, 266 in 2017. And Matt was right. Stolte was a big player. He was the third leading rusher last year at 45 carries, averaged 5 yards a pop. So, review a little bit, guys, on the as we get into our prediction portion of the contest. If I would not have changed my score, would not have followed the path, I would have won.
I talked you into it.
You did. Our score, final score was Williamsburg 31-7, or West Branch 31, Williamsburg 7. I said 26-7, taking a page out of a few years ago. Had I kept that, I might have won. I changed it to 26-13. Matt said 38-13. Steven said 31. Got it right. 13. Ding, ding, ding. And Gregory Norfleet of West Branch Times said 35-21. So, Steven, you're on the board. Matt, where you at, bud? Where you at?
I was close.
Yeah, close. Close gets second place, and second place isn't remembered.
Well, at least I wasn't being an alibi icon coming up with excuses as to why I didn't get it.
You're right. I'm an alibi icon. Well, I'm a team player is what I am.
Okay.
I'm all for the team. And if that means I take a loss so we get a win, that's all. I'm all for it.
Yep.
So this week, Matt, we're going to let you go first because we want you to get a victory, perhaps along with the Bears, should you choose them to win. So we'll let you get the first score.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely take the Bears this week. And 40-17.
Wow, 40-17. All right, since I got second, I guess I will go next. We'll let Steven bring up. He'll be the man. He's gonna bring in the anchor. Actually, he's gonna toss it, and we're gonna lay spot right there. I will say 34-13. West Branch, by the way, 34-13. Voice of the Bears, who you got?
$1.
We could go 1-0, Steven, if you want.
No, I don't think it's going to forfeit. They're going to show up. They're going to play. I know that. You guys are right there close to what I was thinking. So I'll go kind of in between. We're going to make it close, and you're going to have to pull out the abacus to figure out the winner. I'm going to say 38-16 Bears.
38-16 West Branch. Gregory, no choice.
We'll hear from him this week.
We will hear from him this week. Now the picks to click. Last week, I said the Thumb, Wyatt Hanby, defense specifically. Matt said Trey Eagle. Gregory said Bo Cornwell. And Steven said Brett Shealy. Now, Matt on our table of contest has a bold face prediction there, bold face type rather on Brett Shealy. Of the three of us, Stephen, I think from a statistical perspective, you're 2-0 from last week. But the good news is the Bears went 1-0, so we all win no matter who we choose. By the way, Gregory Norfleet had Bo Cornwell, 286. That's a fairly good pick. So, we'll reverse the order this time. Steven, first choice.
I get the first choice, huh? Yep. I'm going to pull out the freshman. I'm going to play the freshman card, Thomas Gould. Okay. He would have been a good candidate last week with a couple of big catches, and I think we're going to see him just get a little more comfortable out there and be able to do some things.
All right. Well, I got to go through my defense and pick out who I feel. Tanner Lukowski, if I picked him on defense, Matt, well, he's defensive specifically for me. Defense pick specifically. Again, because it's worked so far. Got to keep the same formula. You can take him on offense. That's your Justin Bieber one time for the regular season.
I was going to, but I think I'm going to save him, especially if he's a one-time kind of guy. I'm taking
the other one.
Collectively, offensive line.
Okay. Ooh.
There has been a precedent set that we can take that.
There has been.
So I'm doing
it. I guess, Stephen, I can sign off on that if you will.
Oh, yeah, that's good. I'm never going to complain with those big uglies getting some love up front. So
it's a no-lose situation, in my opinion.
Yeah. Weather pending. The pregame is set to start around 7 p.m., the pregame coverage on the Bearcast, Stephen. Kickoff scheduled on or about 7:30 next week. Weather pending right now. The forecast looks like a lot of sunshine, which is tough to believe. The Bearcast brought to you, by WestBranchFootball.com. The Mixlr app or on westbranchfootball.com. Our wonderful sponsors, guys, are off the top of your head. Go for it.
Liberty Communications. I don't have them alphabetized like Matt does. So, Main Street Suites. We've got Full Wider Insurance Agency. We've got Cornerstone Real Estate Consultants. We have, let's see here.
I can help you out, Stephen.
I'm trying to think because I know there's like three others right there. The Hoover Presidential Foundation.
Yes. Stick with that letter.
Yeah. Hodge Construction.
Yes.
You've got Corridor Drywall.
Yes.
You've got EMS Detergent Services.
Yes.
Got
a couple more. You're right. Stick in West Branch.
West Branch Times and Community State Bank.
Community State Bank, member FDIC.
Member
FDIC. How could I forget that?
Go visit offensive coordinator, assistant head coach John Hirschman in his office for all your loan and financial service needs.
So 7:30.
If you want to talk X's and O's.
7:30 kickoff Friday for varsity. JV starts at 5. And in between those games, as we mentioned earlier, will be the Military Appreciation Night festivities. So if you're not there for JV game, get there at least a little bit earlier than you would normally for varsity games to catch all that action.
All right. Social media, Stephen. Instead of giving you a chance to close the program, you've botched that greatly.
I've got it written on my palm.
Okay. What are some of the places in the hashtags or whatever where you can see, where you can follow the Bears football team on social media?
Or you go to westbranchfootball.com.
That's one.
Facebook and look for West Branch Football.
That's the easy
Twitter,
one.
You go to at West Branch, is it WB Bears Football?
That's correct. He's on a roll. That's two for two.
And then Instagram, you can't forget that one. We've got, I don't remember the exact tag there, but.
I'll tell you what, you've already said it once.
I made it easy for everyone. It's at WB Bears Football anywhere you want to go, except Snapchat. We're not on there, or Pinterest.
Yeah.
What the heck, man? I know. We need to start YouTube stuff on Pinterest.
No.
Yeah. Look at Jerry Flagel's recipe for success in District 4 food tasting.
District 4 food of the week.
Yeah, the
Coach Peterson, we found these lovely little doilies that we could sew onto the uniforms.
Yeah. I've pinned them on our Pinterest board.
Didn't mention YouTube, Matt.
YouTube.
Football YouTube and subscribe to that page. Well, really quickly, guys, I am excited about the opportunities that are present the team on Friday night. Besides just the fact of finishing up the district season, non-district season with 4 wins and 0 losses, the ever so important Cedar County trophy game, and beating a wonderful opponent, 2A opponent that's 3-0 coming into this game, and winning it at a game at the Rose Bowl. And I don't know anything else happening Friday, possibly with the win, Stephen. We've already talked about it, but I can't remember. I'm going drawing a blank here.
There may be something if there is a win. I don't know. We'll have to look into it and see. We'll just say I did some research over the weekend, so.
You've got some, okay. Any numbers, anything like that, or you want to save it?
I've got some notes for lucky number 13.
Lucky number 13, okay.
13.
I've no idea what that means, but Dakota Kahlberg, you're on the clock, buddy. Lucky number 13.
No, not him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, really quickly before we say goodbye, folks, here's a memory for you. Matt and I have already chronicled what's possible for this week. I'm going to take you back to game number one of the Coach Butch Peterson varsity era. I was just a wee lad of 9 years old, riding in my parents' car over to watch the first game of the season that year at Tipton. On the radio, going around one of the curves on F-36, headed east, north, whatever direction it is, wherever we're going, we'll be there. And on the radio, a song was playing. It was The Safety Dance by Men Without Hats. I always have, you know, when you hear a song, you're like, you remember where you were? Every time I hear, there it is. Matt, you're so good at this, The Safety Dance. Because we can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. But if your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. Well, if your friends don't dance, that means the Bears don't win. We want all of our friends to dance on Friday night, not just for a win, but to celebrate history. But first things first. Guys, this has been a fun podcast. Matt, thanks for all you do. Steven, what else you got? I mean, give us the ice. The polar bear of the month is...
the monster cookie.
The monster cookie.
Folks, twist ice cream, peanut butter, hot fudge, M&Ms, and cookie dough.
Wow.
And Matt Chenander is about ready to hang it up and get in his car in North Liberty at the WestBranchFootball.com studios, which aren't actually in West Branch, but it doesn't matter. Wherever it goes, he'll be there.
I'm gonna go there and eat more sugar than I have in the last, like, 6 months combined.
6 months combined.
There you go. That's what we're here for.
He's waiting. I tell you what, he's waiting for the cheese curd wing ding, polar bear. I'm not sure that would go over very well.
Yeah, that might be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we can dance if you want to. We can leave your friends behind. Right now, we're going to leave everybody behind and thank them for listening along. Take care, everyone.